Welcome back to Senior Talk Radio here on 88.1 FM and WCWP.org. This is Project Independence and You. I'm your host, John Ryan. My co-host today is Sari Fleisch, and she's here. See, the last names I get wrong. And I've been calling Dr. Botkin Laura versus Lauren. I apologize for that because I know it's Lauren. You guys were just talking briefly at the break because I know Sari has done work with support groups, etc. Can you both give me what you would feel are signs that either the senior or somebody living with the senior should watch out for? Sometimes I may not be at all aware of that something's going on, but my wife might turn around and say, you're acting funny. You know, you haven't been doing something. That's all. Some ideas for people and caregivers to be watching out for.
Well, you know, I think that one of the things that people probably should watch out for is when someone is giving a lot of persistent and vague complaints about body aches and so forth, or just about life circumstances. Maybe they're doing a lot of excessive health seeking. Maybe they're moving physically in a slower manner than they were before, or perhaps being more demanding than usual, or asking for reassurance a lot. This is a big one. Social withdrawal is a huge problem, both in anxiety and depression. People become very avoidant. Those are probably just sort of visible signs from the outside. But also, you know, symptoms of depression in older adults present somewhat differently than in younger adults. There's just more of an emphasis, I think. We see more memory problems, confusion, social withdrawal, loss of appetite, weight loss, as I said, big complaints of pain, inability to sleep, irritability, and people actually can even have very fixed ideas that are that border on delusional or outright delusional about people being out to get you. And you can even see things and hear things that aren't there. But then, you know, people with depression who are younger can have some of those symptoms
as
well.
Right.
And other ones like feelings of sadness, feelings of worthlessness, a loss of pleasure in the things that you usually enjoy, loss of interest in sex, and, you know, thoughts of death and suicide.
Well, sometimes physically, if you look at the person, they're hunched over. Their face is sort of like in a frown. They're not smiling. They don't even want to look at you. Their eyes are looking down. And you say to them, hey, what's going on? What's happening? You look so sad. And they'll tell you what their problem is. And a couple of years ago, my husband had a operation at the hospital, and the doctor didn't give me good news. And that night, I experienced dizziness. So these are characteristics of how you feel physically that begin to show emotionally.
Yeah, absolutely. Dizziness is a big one, and it's confusing to people because you don't associate that normally.
I've never heard of that before. That's interesting.
And in fact, for some people, it's just the primary thing, and it's frightening because then they're now more afraid of falling, which is when you get older is a bigger deal. You know, I think that increasingly in my own practice, you know, I practice cognitive behavioral therapy, and that is a very goal-directed therapy, and there's a lot of psychoeducation.
We're not going to go there. Is that Gestalt?
No, it's not.
I thought that was that one. That's right. Okay.
Not at all.
Okay, fine. Actually, what I'm going to do is give out Lauren's phone number, which is 516-441-7875. That's Laura Botkin, 516-441-7875. And your office is in
Manhasset.
Manhasset. Okay.
Yeah.
But go ahead. You were saying you practice cognitive.
Yeah, cognitive behavioral therapy, which is a very goal-oriented therapy.
Okay.
It seeks to be very efficient. So I usually tell people when they walk in my office the very first time, my goal is to get you out of here as soon as possible. And so it's a little different, perhaps, from what people normally think about with therapy. People, I think, worry about getting committed to going every week for the rest of their lives to therapy. And, you know, you may not really need so many sessions necessarily. But when it comes to anxiety and depression, I like to conceptualize this as being like a bully in your head. Now, while you might be having a lot of physical symptoms, you're probably having a lot of thinking symptoms as well. And depression and anxiety disorders, they bully you. They make you believe things that aren't necessarily true. So like with depression, that you're worthless, that people really don't want you around anyway. With anxiety, that you're in danger, that the worst case scenario is going to happen. And then you start to believe it and you start avoiding things. So really, these health conditions can have a tremendous effect in your life, even if they're sub-threshold disorders, as in just some symptoms of it, and they wouldn't really necessarily meet criteria for full-scale depression or generalized anxiety disorder, they can still really compromise your life.
Right. You know, I think you have just said that so nice and clearly, that bully concept. And then, you know, people have had bullies in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
You overcome the bully. And so cognitive behavioral therapy would be the goal, 2 months, 6 months, whatever it's going to be, I'm not putting the time on it, that you have to come to grips with what it really is.
Yeah, you know, what I really work with is helping people do exactly what you just said. Think about it like a person in mm-hmm. a way, right? If you have a bully, you can't say, bully, go away, and your bully goes away. Your bully's not going to go away.
Right,
They're going to stick around with you. So you have to learn to regard your thoughts in a more distant, evaluative way, meaning, you know, I have thousands of thoughts a day. Just because I'm having this thought doesn't mean it's important necessarily. Trying to push away a thought actually makes it stronger. So you have to learn to live with that thought coming, you know, through your head sometimes like an annoying tune. I actually have people assign a tune. I really hate the music to Jeopardy. It's very whiny. Nah, 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 nah. I can't stand it. If I had a bully in my head, I wouldn't try to argue with it, because you can't always be logical, especially when it comes to something you're terrified of.
Right.
You can't talk yourself out of something you're terrified of. And if you keep having the same argument with it over and over again to try to neutralize your anxiety, you're actually invalidating all of the previous arguments you've had. You're having the same argument over and over and over with yourself and your brain. I like to help people regard those thoughts that they have that tend to come into their heads as being like their top 10 hits of anxiety and depression. And to learn to not engage with it necessarily, but to focus on what's important in the moment, which is living your life fully. Maybe it's reading your book and enjoying it. And you let that thought come and go and don't engage with it.
Well, I have had experience with a lot of mature people age 50 and over who were looking for jobs. Mm-hmm. And they had this terrible anxiety that the employer didn't want to hire them because of their age, which might be true. But that affected their entire persona when they went on an interview, because they were so frightened that they wouldn't get the job because they thought that they weren't liked because of their age, mm-hmm. and that they didn't have the skills like today's children have, or, you know, today's job seekers. And so many of these people experience it when they go to sleep at night. It prevents them from sleeping, mm-hmm. because during the day they're so busy interviewing, doing their resume, and, you know, looking for that job, that at night it begins to affect them and prevents them from sleep, mm-hmm. because they're fighting with that bully in their mind.
Yeah, it's true. Sleep hygiene is actually a really important part of working with people who have generalized anxiety, which is really what's going on there with all likelihood if someone's chronically worrying a great deal. It's probably the leading anxiety disorder in older Americans. And so sleep is one of the first things I ask about almost every session. How's your sleep been this week? And I help people learn how to have better sleep hygiene and anticipate what their typical traps are with mm-hmm. worrying. And accepting the fact that, you know what, sometimes you just may be wired for anxiety a bit and you are going to have a not great night's sleep. It doesn't mean that you can't function the next day. It doesn't mean that you can't be competent. And, you know, instead of sitting and worrying about it, letting that bully in your head say, you're going to get a terrible night's sleep, you're going to be awful tomorrow because of it, you won't be able to function, you won't be able to drive, learn to regard that as, oh, that's a top 10 hit. And instead, take care of yourself. Maybe, you know, maybe it's good for you to read at night and bring your thoughts back to what's in front of you. Calm your body down and just let yourself fall asleep. If you wake up in the middle of the night, there are strategies you can use that are going to help you pair your bed with sleepfulness instead of pairing it with wakefulness. So this is all part of CBT. Right, well, yeah.
This is amazing. It really is a great conversation. Do you do couple therapy? And when I'm saying, I don't mean couple therapy from like a married couple. I mean, if I should be going or my wife should be going, mm-hmm. but she resists. And I'm saying she's changing, she's getting dizzy and different mm-hmm. things, but she's not accepting the fact that maybe she should talk with somebody. Is that a prudent thing to do? Say, listen, why don't we together go visit?
You know, that is a really good question. I think a lot of people worry a lot before bringing in a loved one when you're trying to confront them over some sort of mental mm-hmm. health issue. And if you're talking about a spouse.
Right, yeah. That's,
yeah.
Or a parent.
Or even a parent.
You know,
look.
Somebody you'd be close enough to say, Ma, let's go together.
It's absolutely prudent because, you know, therapists, we're really used to people coming into our office who don't necessarily want to be there. Right. So there are some people we call them customers. They really want to change something about themselves. They want to get better. But then there are people who are visitors. They're mandated to be there by someone else.
Okay.
Right. And that's OK. You have to figure out where someone is with regard to their motivation for being there the very first session. And you speak to that. You know, maybe the goal for that person is going to be to help them get the other person off their back. But along the way, maybe you're going to help make them a customer. You'll help them with the problem that they really have.
That's interesting. Visited a customer.
But
makes sense.
But do you find that if you're bringing in that person to talk about their problems, if that person that accompanies them prevents that the person who's coming in to be interviewed from disclosing everything that they feel because they want to trust you to be confidential about what they're feeling?
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, you know, you always have to have the permission
right.
of the people in your office to speak in front of them. And, you know, you can ask someone, hey, can you sit in the waiting room for a little while? I'd like to speak to your spouse alone. And, you know, I think that's actually a very important thing to do in general, is to get people alone for a while. But also, family and caregivers are enormously helpful, especially with older Americans. For helping make sure that therapy continues, that there are fewer barriers to treatment, helping them get there, mm-hmm. Helping remind them maybe about the homework.
Right, right.
Because in cognitive therapy, you have homework. And that's going to be maybe doing a short reading or maybe just applying some new strategy that you've talked about in session, such as, hey, someone who is depressed or anxious, they might be very socially isolated. Maybe the homework is you're going to go out to that family gathering this week and see how it changes how you think and feel.
Right.
Is it what you're anticipating, or is it actually making you feel better? And you regard that as an experiment, a good experiment. You don't know the result, but no matter what, the results are valuable information.
Perfect. Actually, we're out of time. This is amazing. And we've been talking with Dr. Lauren Botkin, and we're going to have you back. And
oh, thank
Lauren's
you.
Phone number is 516-441-7875. I think this was a tremendous conversation. I really appreciate it so much for taking the time.
And thank
to help
you
us
for
all.
Having me.
No, our pleasure. You're listening to Senior Talk Radio here on 88.1 FM and WCWP.org. We'll be right back. Super.